Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the June 10th, 2012 edition of Don't Let It Go Unheard. It's the podcast devoted to discussing news and politics from the perspective of Ayn Rand's philosophy, Objectivism. I'm your host, Amy Peikoff, and here are the topics that we have today. First, the right way, and then the wrong way to promote the interests of gays and, by implication, other minorities. Then, can Obama win the election this fall simply by collecting more data about us than Romney collects? And third, why in the world did he say that the private sector is doing fine this week? Why did Obama say that? So we'll talk about those topics. We have a few more little tidbits at the end if we have time. If you want to talk about these issues with us, call in 760-888-5817. Again, that's 760-888-5817. Or you can join us in the chat room here on Blog Talk Radio. I see a few people already warming up the discussion in here. People say that they're picking up feedback. I don't know. Let me know in the chat room if you're hearing a lot of feedback, or if it's just one person. You might have some sound settings on your computer. I think ours are okay.
Maybe your chair is squeaking off.
Not sure. Think we're good?
Yeah.
Hearing in your headphones?
Oh, yeah. No, oh, yeah? Totally fine.
Okay. I think we're good. So let's start in. There's an article from the New York Times, June 9th, 2012, entitled "The GOP's Gay Trajectory." The GOP's Gay Trajectory. And it is an article about someone named Paul Singer. He's 67 years old, and the article tells us he's a billionaire hedge fund manager who was among the most important Republican donors nationwide. In just one Manhattan fundraiser last month, he helped to collect more than $5 million for Mitt Romney's presidential campaign. So that's not too shabby, right? $5 million. Then it says he steadfastly supports conservative candidates. No surprise. But he also steadfastly supports gay rights in general and marriage equality in particular. He says, along with a few other leading Wall Street financiers, he contributed and helped drum up the majority of the money, more than $1 million, that fueled the campaign for same-sex marriage in New York. Then the article continues and says he has given nearly $10 million of his own money to gay rights initiatives, including the same-sex marriage efforts not only in New York, but also in New Hampshire and New Jersey. And that figure doesn't include his assistance in tapping a broad network of donors for individual candidates. He was pivotal in rounding up about $250,000 apiece for Republican state senators in New York whose votes for same-sex marriage provided the margin of victory in the legislature. And now what he's doing, and this is what the article is focusing on, now, Singer says, he is providing $1 million to start a new super PAC with several Republican compatriots, and it's called the American Unity PAC. Its sole mission will be to encourage Republican candidates to support same-sex marriage, in part by helping them to feel financially shielded from any blowback from the well-funded groups, the religious right, that oppose it. He believes, in this interview that he did with the New York Times, he says that he believes that there are more than a few Republicans who could be on the verge of support or are harboring and hiding their views. Imagine that, hiding your views about gay marriage within the Republican Party, right? Couldn't even imagine that. And this, then he says, this is a quote from Singer himself, and this kind of effort could be catalytic in generating some more movement, end quote, he said. He is straight himself. He's not gay. But the article says he has a gay son and son-in-law who were married in Massachusetts, which legalized same-sex marriage in 2004. And he criticizes the Republicans for what he calls harshness on the so-called social issues, abortion, birth control, immigration, and homosexuality. And he says the Republican position on gay marriage in particular flies in the face of an irrefutable trajectory of increasing support for same-sex marriage among Americans, especially younger ones. And then here's an interesting stat that the article cites. In a CNN ORC international poll released Wednesday, a whopping 73% of respondents between ages of 18 and 34 said they favored marriage equality. So that's the future of the issue. Republicans know that if they don't go along with that, that they're going to be left behind in terms of political support. There's a former Republican National Committee chairman, I had already heard of him, Ken Mellman. Had you heard of him before?
Yeah,
so he came out as homosexual.
Right,
and he says, quote, "A political party that ignores demography or ignores broader cultural trends does so at its own peril," end quote. And then I like this part of the article, because the article says, even apart from that, this idea that you're ignoring the popular sentiment in the culture, right? Because logically, the popular sentiment in the culture doesn't mean anything.
Right.
It just means that a bunch of people raised their hands and said they agree.
Right.
You don't know whether they're doing it based on emotion or a thought process based on proof or anything else. It's a, you know, a form of appeal to authority. You're appealing to the masses.
That's right.
You know, you're giving up your opinion just to whatever public opinion is. That's not the important thing. The article goes on to say, even apart from popular sentiment, that Mellman, Singer, and many other Republicans say that marriage equality, which in fact gets government out of the business of controlling and casting judgment on people's private lives, is consistent with conservative principles," end quote. Now, of course, it would be better if they went on to say, look, homosexuals, two consenting adults, are not infringing on anyone's rights if they choose to have a certain type of long-term committed monogamous relationship.
But they're infringing on their religious feelings. What are you talking about? They're infringing on their religious feelings.
But offending people's feelings doesn't infringe on their rights, right?
Yeah, but they believe it
so
does.
So that is where the article could have gone further than this.
Yeah, but this is fine. I mean,
I'm pretty impressed with this, the New York Times. You know, the New York Times is impressed with the fact that there is within the Republican Party, some movement towards embracing this issue, and I like the fact that they differentiated the issue of demography of an idea being popular from the idea of it being consistent with conservative principles. Not that they said what those principles were very well, but that's okay. Singer says, "quote It very well fits within my framework of freedom," end quote. Adding that it promotes quote family stability, end quote, and is a tribute to an institution in need of one. And then I love, this is pretty funny, he says, this is Singer again, "obviously the institution of marriage in America has utterly collapsed." And he says that gay and lesbian couples nonetheless want to wed is a kind of a lovely thing and a cool thing and a wonderful thing.
That's funny.
End quote. You know, it's like, why do they want to get married? I mean, marriage has almost a bad name these days with the high rate of divorce and everything else. So
they want to fall. They want to, you know what I mean?
Isn't
on their
that
own.
Cool? Yeah.
I mean, as everyone does, we want to fall. We want to, regardless, we always think that our particular relationship is always going to survive this, you know.
And in terms of Republicans and seeing the numbers of Republicans who are getting behind the right side of this issue, which is to go ahead and support gay marriage. You know, again, we've talked about this on past shows. You know, homosexuality is nothing immoral. You might say that it's something that's abnormal, but it is perfectly, 100% moral to pursue a monogamous sexual relationship and a long-term committed relationship with somebody of the same sex.
Can you elaborate on that?
If that's what you have.
In terms of...
Well, I don't want to go too much. And so much of this is psychology, too, and it has to do with whatever your personal beliefs are. My personal beliefs are that it is something that somebody decides very, very early on in their life in such a way that it would be, for all intents and purposes today, something ineradicable. I'm not sure exactly if you're exactly born with it. You might be born with a predisposition to it. I think it's something very, very strong, and it's nothing that you're going to go cure with therapy or any of this
like
stuff.
If you try
to deny that this is part of your nature by the time you come of age sexually, you're just in for a life of torture. And I think the only moral thing to do at that point is to acknowledge who you are and have,
regardless of what society
have
says,
a good moral, you know, monogamous, good, long-standing relationship. You know, obviously some relationships don't last for the entirety of your life, but that's the ideal, is to
this idea that,
have that commitment.
That, you know, and the term gay marriage, it comes down to a point where it's just called marriage. But the right wing, I think, wants to hold on to this allegedly sacred term marriage.
Yeah, but the true ideal is that the government has nothing to do
exactly
with this institution
right
at all, except
for
acknowledging a certain contractual relationship.
But they take it as a given, though. I mean, that's it. You know, government's in. That's it.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you want government as little involved in people's personal lives as possible and only be concerned with protecting people's rights. Part of that would be recognizing certain types of standard contractual relationships between people and perhaps standardizing those relationships and saying that you can be part of this thing that's called marriage if you jump through XYZ hoops and declare it in the appropriate ways, and then the government will protect your interests in certain ways accordingly in terms of inheritance or visitation in hospitals and these types of things. And why shouldn't homosexuals have the same ability to have this as heterosexuals?
What's the argument against it?
Mostly it's religious.
Religious
or feelings, one of the two. You know,
some people get disgusted. The slippery slope. Well, if we allow that, then people marry their dogs, marry their chairs. I mean, you know, that's what they say.
Oh yeah, the slippery slope.
I am
talking about two consenting adults. In the chat room, Deborah says, "Don't be silly, Amy. Gayness can be cured via prayer. Just pray the gay away," as the creators of South Park put it. Or as Michelle Bachmann's husband said he wanted to do. So in terms of how far the Republicans have come on this issue, in New Hampshire, when 3 years ago they legalized gay marriage, only 9 Republicans supported the measure. Now, I guess they had to have a vote to keep same-sex marriage legal, I guess, because there was some sort of referendum that they had to vote about. 119 Republicans joined 92 Democrats.
Interesting.
So there were more Republicans and Democrats that voted for that measure to keep same-sex marriage legal in New Hampshire this time than 3 years ago. Only 3 years difference. Then there's in Massachusetts, a gay congressional candidate, Richard Tessay. And he supports marriage equality. He has been anointed as one of the National Republican Congressional Committee's young guns, which means that the Republican leaders are invested in his bid for office. He's a gay congressional candidate, so I think that's a good sign well. All of this, I think, is a good sign. Now, in terms of supporting Romney, you might say, well, why is it that Singer is supporting Romney? Because Romney has come out against gay marriage. First of all, he thinks really that, there's not going to be much movement probably federally that way. But he says, more importantly, and this is where we stand on this issue, quote, "I feel very strongly that Obama needs to be fired and that the Republicans are right on most things," end quote, he said, adding that with continued work on marriage equality, he expects to persuade more Republicans of its rightness too. And it seems to be that he's got evidence for that in the case of New Hampshire, right?
Absolutely right.
Continuing from Singer, quote, "I think it would be naive of me to take this issue and just append everything else I believe because I think we're making progress," end quote. So his idea is he's not going to vote simply on this one issue, even though it's a very, very important issue, an issue so important that he's putting $1 million behind a political action committee to support all these candidates.
We need America.
Nonetheless, he thinks that Obama is so bad that we have to get this guy out. Now, why is this good? In this article, the New York Times keeps saying that he is in favor of gay rights in general and gay marriage in particular, but they never list any other so-called gay rights issue that he is supposedly behind. They discuss only the issue of gay marriage.
Right.
I don't have a problem with the issue of gay marriage at all, insofar as government is involved in marriage probably more than it needs to be anyway.
Right.
Why shouldn't homosexuals be treated equally to heterosexuals? If it was the case that this guy Singer was in favor of some special favors for gays, some sort of affirmative action for gays, anti-discrimination laws about gays that don't let people be irrational and suffer the market consequences for it, any of those types of things, I wouldn't be in favor. But I think
it doesn't sound like.
If you want to promote the rights of homosexuals to have the same exact type of benefits as heterosexuals, this is the way to do it. You go out, you start your political action committee, you're very clear about your issue. Yes, you're supporting Romney, but you make very clear why you're doing it, and you make clear your disagreements with him, and you keep hammering on those disagreements, and you'll support such candidates only insofar, and he says at the end, because I think we're making progress. If you think it's hopeless with the Republican Party, if you've concluded that, then you say, I'm out of here. I am not supporting you at all.
I mean, he has
no
proof, yeah.
No, and I think he's had some positive.
And also, his
evidence
thing is we need the country to survive.
Right.
And we
got
to get Obama out.
Yeah.
And then we can worry about these issues.
So I think this is a good issue. Now, we have a caller here, but the caller doesn't say he necessarily has a question. We'll try it. Let's see here. Hi, do you have a question or comment? I think this person is just listening, and so we will allow people to just listen. If you do want to, when you call in, ask a question, I believe there's a little prompt that tells you to hit a button, and it'll give me a little question mark, and that's when I know that they actually want to talk to us. We do have some people here in the chat room. People are happy that there's actually positive political news. You know, we had Wisconsin this week, and Robert in New York City in the chat room is pointing that out.
Absolutely.
Wisconsin was great news.
And do you know how bad it was for Democrats? Because Democrats came on the air and said, "This is not bad. This is a good thing. I mean, this is not a bad thing.
This is not going to hurt Obama.
That means
it will
hurt him."
Yeah,
and
And I heard one story of them busing in people to
out
vote
state,
illegally,
yes.
So to actually commit voter fraud, so that there was some voter fraud going on.
And still,
you
clearly won.
Walker defeated the recall. The other thing that was interesting and I think just illustrative of the intellectual bankruptcy of the left this week was the reaction, not just the denial and the evasion that we saw in the media, but the threats of violence on Twitter. There was documentation in an article, I can't remember, I've posted it on the Don't Let It Go Unheard page on Facebook if you want to find it there, but I can't remember where they posted this. But
it
there were
a number of
tweets, kill Scott Walker, expletives, things about his wife and everything.
And also the white guy, I mean, there were some racists in there, some black racists calling out his race.
Right.
Really, and this is the nature of the people who are doing this. This is who they are when they don't get their way.
Now, it looks like we've got someone who does want to talk, but I've got one caller and the number doesn't match to what we're seeing in the chat room. Hello, are you there?
Hello?
Hello. This is the one caller I see on my dashboard. I've got someone in the chat room saying they want to talk.
Okay,
I guess not. There is a difficulty. So whoever you are in the chat room who said you wanted to talk, a caller in the queue, I don't see you here on my dashboard. So maybe you're not connected the way you think you are. If you were in your queue, I'd be answering it. Again, the number, if you want to call in and talk about these issues, are 760-888-5817. What else do we have here in terms of discussion? Wisconsin's good news. People are looking at the leads of Romney. I think that there are probably polls that Obama has access to that we don't have access to that show that he's pretty hurt in terms of stats. I think they're pretty.
Yeah, he's looking pretty bad.
I think they're pretty worried. But we will talk in a few about a certain type of measure that Obama is trying to take. You know, could this, you know, pack that Singer is starting here, could this be a model for the way that we could bring the Republicans around on other social issues? Legalizing drugs, for example. And speaking of which, by the way, we saw Gary Johnson, he did an appearance on Red Eye recently, and they were talking about legalizing drugs. And when he talks about legalizing drugs, supposedly he's a libertarian, he immediately talks about taxing and regulating it without even any hesitation. And it took the host of Red Eye to question him, and actually it may have also been Andy Levy at the halftime report or saying, you're a libertarian, why is it that you want to regulate and tax it? Why not just legalize it and that's it?
He also asked him, did you flip? And he says, I'm like, yeah, I did. He admitted to actually just totally turning on something that he had promised prior.
Well, that was something else. Okay. That was a different issue. But
so then he's even worse. I mean, so a different issue.
Yeah, I don't know what issue it was, though. So I don't know how much importance it was. But the point here is that he immediately talks about regulating and taxing without even a heartbeat. And when asked about it, he said, oh, it's because that way it's more palatable.
Something like that, right.
So to me, he is very disappointing. So the question
is, wishy-washy.
Because of the movement that we are seeing on this issue of gay marriage, we might see similar things happen with the legalizing drugs issue. I would love to see a more principled way of looking at that, not them seeing it as another way to achieve a so-called revenue increase for the government, right? And another huge set of regulations.
And all this hinges on getting Obama out. I mean, all this.
Yeah. Immigration.
Getting the country better.
Immigration. I could see maybe it would happen with immigration, that you would say, I think it's time to allow peaceful, productive foreigners to, you know, people who don't pose any danger to us at all, to come into our country, immigrate lawfully, and not be treated as outcasts for years and years and years and keep trying to get, you know, taken advantage of by immigration attorneys who supposedly have ins with the INS and all this ridiculous. So I could see some movement there. Why not have a pack for that? Abortion. And I was thinking about, I mean, and this is an important issue, this idea that you are going to interfere with the rights of a woman based on religious ideas about when life begins. Nonetheless, I don't know if I could see the energy be put behind abortion, maybe. I mean, obviously, I think that Planned Parenthood has done this kind of thing for years. But when you think of helping two people who are in love with each other be able to have a marriage and be able to be treated like any other two people who are, you know, again, consenting adults, in love with each other, want to make a lifelong commitment, you're helping them do that. This is a positive. Legalizing drugs, it's not so much of a positive. I would say immigration, properly conceived, is a very positive thing. So I could see people getting maybe excited about PACs for, yes, gay marriage, and also for immigration.
A few things got to fall into
drugs,
place.
Drugs, and abortion. Oh, yeah, abortion. Woohoo, let's go. $1 million for abortion. I don't think I could see people getting as excited about that, unfortunately, because it is an important issue. But there's not the, there's the positive in the sense of you are helping a woman achieve her wishes. But in many cases, what abortion does is there's been some sort of a mishap with birth control. Obviously, in the cases of rape, you are you are definitely achieving a positive by removing a horrible crime.
Yeah, but Santorum said it's a gift from God, so you have to accept the rape baby.
I know. But
I know it's good. He's gone. It's really good to not see his face or hear his voice. You know.
I don't know. We could see it, but I think this could be a model for how to move the Republicans away from their outdated and interventionist stances on all these social issues, and I was really, really glad to see it. So I think that is the right way. This is the correct way. If you want to further the interests of gays and by implication of other minorities, for instance, if blacks were being treated unequally and we needed to do some more things along race lines and stuff, set up your pack and go do it. Now we're going to talk about something that is the wrong way to promote the interests of gays in the culture. And this is something that Bosch has been talking to me about for the last few weeks. I was hoping you would.
Well, you know, comics. Yeah. I don't know if you heard. I think everyone has heard. DC has turned a 70-year-old character, the original Green Lantern, gay after he was established as a heterosexual, married man, children. He even had a gay son. So I guess they wipe out that actual gay character that existed. And, you know, the timing of it all is strange because you got Marvel and DC trying to, you know, outgay each other. And it's all coming out within 1 month of each other, weeks of each other. And it's pandering. I mean, naked pandering to try to get, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they're trying to do, really.
Okay, so wait, so you're saying that they're taking existing established characters that we may have even had reason to believe were straight or that we knew nothing about their sexuality at all.
Now
and then they're adding on top of this that, okay, they're gay.
Yeah. And, you know, they did this also. I mean, when it comes to race, they're turning white characters black. They're turning, I mean, I think they even get into sexuality when, I mean, into sex, when turn men into women and vice versa. And my thing is, I tweeted in response to this, and, you know, it's, I said, in the race, sex, sexuality wars going on between Marvel and DC Comics, who will be the first to turn a black male Muslim into a gay white female Jew? I'm just, you know, doing a riff on that. And also, you want real controversy, comic book publishers? Try making a black character white, a gay character straight, and a female character male. You know, there's a simple thing is you create a character from scratch.
No, wait. But see, if they made a female character who was a villain into a male, that would be okay.
Right.
That would be fine.
That's right. And also, you know, would they – now, what's next? Will they create a gay villain, a gay supervillain? Will they do that? And someone, a gay friend of mine said, well, I think gays have been vilified enough. That's pretty funny. That's a funny response. But at the same time, I mean, if you really, if you talk about sex, I mean, it's just, you know, to dominate comics right now, it's, you know, it's like, again, it's not coming out of a natural writer who's creating something. It's the company saying, okay, let's just slap on, let's just make this character gay now. And then Marvel says, oh, yeah, well, we can have a gay marriage. Oh, yeah, we'll have a gay character. And it's not about story. It's not about story. There have been gay characters in comics for decades and decades. Natural characters which just were created as gay characters from day one, and they are what they are, and that's it. But
well,
to...
and think about this, right? I mean, to me, it's so patronizing because they're saying instead of creating a new character from scratch who happens to be gay, that the only way that we can give adequate attention to this issue is by taking this established character and changing him into something that nobody ever thought that he was, just to basically,
you know, they are implying something about, you know, new characters, I guess, and gay characters that they cannot, you know, make it on their own. They can't.
Yeah.
And, you know, this character, I mean, will they change him in other ways? Fundamentally, I don't know. But it's just to try to, you know, create a brand new one from scratch, Marvel, DC. I mean, just do it and see how that works.
Did you ever see this thing that Robert in New York City is talking about here in the chat room? He says the only legit gay cartoon characters are the ambiguously gay duo from Saturday Night Live.
Funny. Yeah, it was very funny. And they were always doing these things that were, you know, I guess, whatever. One needs to ride the other in order to fly.
Yeah, exactly.
And the bad guy's like, all turned off and looking away, and that's how they beat them because they're all disoriented. The bad guys
are always freaking out.
But also one thing, I mean, they're turning the original Green Lantern gay, right? So the news headlines, the media, Green Lantern is gay. So now people, oh, okay, Hal Jordan, who's the current Green Lantern, he's gay. No. It's the old what? You said Green Lantern's gay. The guy in the movie, So it's also misinterpretation of it. So I don't know. Create it from scratch.
And they negate the movie entirely because in the movie he clearly was not gay.
No, but actually it was a different character. See? That's the point. The original one was Alan Scott. The one after him was Hal Jordan. So it's a different character. And so my response was to create a character that, you know, hopefully I could pitch to Marvel and DC called literally Gay Man. And but, you know, he's really controversial. And if you want to see why, Google Gay Man Falston. Check it out.
And I think they're just going to engage in this bidding war, and certainly, for sure, they're going to pick up this character. I mean,
Gay Man. You can't beat that.
You can't. I mean, you have this idea, well, you know, I'm going to have Green Lantern be gay. Well, we're going to have a gay marriage. Well, how about a character called
Gay Man? That's it.
Okay, so here's the issue. Why is this approach wrong in terms of promoting gays' interests?
Well, it's nothing substantive. It's nothing.
It's patronizing, right? It doesn't.
It hey, here's a bone.
Do you think it would have the effect of helping gays in terms of their acceptance in the culture or anything like that?
I mean, if it's a good, they can truly create a character from scratch and write it well and make it exciting and entertaining. And then, do that. But to take a character from way back, he's established as well. And you know what? Let's make him gay.
Okay. Well,
I mean, if you want to go for it, make Superman gay. Make Batman gay. As one of the Batman writers said.
But I mean, here's the thing. So for me, there's two issues. Will doing this in comics, for instance, help them achieve equality on the issue of marriage?
Normalize the idea.
On the issue of marriage, do you think it's going to have any influence on politicians and stuff like that? The way that Singer is doing, is clearly going to have an effect.
I don't think so. And one thing, when you first meet the character, at least online, when they show the first introduction, he sees his old lover. Hey, Sam. They walk in. They do a very romantic kiss, which I don't remember the last time I saw a very romantic kiss in comics in general, from even heterosexuals. And the next issue, from what I gather, he proposes to him. He proposes to his boyfriend. And as far as we know, that's his new character.
You've probably seen proposals in comics.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But you don't see this, flaunting of passionate kisses in comics.
No, really,
not too much.
You know what? I mean, some comics are, almost soft porn, and they do that. But I haven't seen, I'm thinking, I don't buy that many comics anymore. I have not been able to buy comics, new comics, for the last few weeks. I think 2 or 3 weeks on the digital comics. They're just not good enough.
Would having gay characters in comics help gays in cases where they're being irrationally discriminated against?
If it's bullied,
and
if it's not
things like your college roommate putting online a video of you having sex with somebody that's going to make you feel so bad that you commit suicide, like that one kid, is it going to prevent stuff like this to have the gay characters in comics?
If they do that, again, there have been writers who've had gay characters in their comics, and they were well-written, and that's it. But this is a media stunt. This is absolutely for headlines in order to get on USA Today and every media outlet that they can.
It worked.
Gay comic, yeah,
it worked.
But, is the comic selling? Is it a good comic?
That's the question. I mean, the 99 got a whole bunch of media attention, but it didn't sell at all.
No.
So it
even though this one comic book app is pushing them pretty hard every single week, And just sorry about comics, if you don't mind. The Infidel number 2 is finished. I'm awaiting word from all the ebook readers to see if they're gonna.
You gotta wait till the plug time at the end for that.
I have to mention.
Nope.
Yeah, but I'm turning Pigman gay, so I have to mention. So that's how she comes out in issue two.
I get it. Michael in the chat room says that this attempt in comics, to put the gay characters in there and make some progress socially, he says it's an attempt to appease, and that alone makes it
wrong. Yeah.
And I agree with that. This attempt to appease is bad. It's not going to get you anywhere in the world.
I'm just curious how homosexuals feel about it, though.
I'd like to know too.
This is a cheesy way of doing it.
I definitely don't want to out anybody in the chat room, though. So I don't know the sexual orientation of people who hang out in my chat room.
How do they feel about it? It's a bat over the head.
Said you had some people who would respond to certain posts of yours and said this is ridiculous, right?
I think at least two. One said this is absolute pandering. It's cheap,
Yeah, would it make gays feel any better to see this? If they see it as a blatant attempt to pander and appease for no good substantive reason, I would much rather see a well thought out, newly constructed gay character who was portrayed within a story that was well written and entertaining,
and with which his sexuality did not dominate the story.
Yeah,
he happened to be gay.
Well, and when does sexuality even come up that much in these superhero and other comics anyway?
They're doing it more, I know. And again, just keep in mind the timing of it. Within 1 month, Marvel, gay marriage. DC, a week later, the Green Lantern comes out. And, all these other things. So it's like, wait a minute, this is truly, truly just, a media stunt on both parts.
Here in the chat room, you've got a fan of your gay man cartoon, Bosch. It's Robert in New York City, so that's awesome.
And again, it is controversial, and his sexuality has the least to do with it. Check it out.
That's right. Speaking of controversy, right, now we get to have discussing Obama potentially trying to win the election. Everyone say boo. Unilaterally, let's all say boo. Obama winning 2012 is a big boo. And at the same time, how is he going to do it? By collecting all sorts of private data about you. Double boo. Boo. Politico article, June 9th.
You mean the leftist rag who pretends it's an objective news source? Go on.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. It's Obama's data advantage, June 9th in Politico. In Chicago, of course, it's in Chicago. On the sixth floor of a sleek office building, more than 150 techies are quietly peeling back the layers of your life. There's a lot of booze in the chat room. I do not blame these people. So they're peeling back the layers of your life. They know what you read and where you shop, what kind of work you do, and who you count as friends. They also know who your mother voted for in the last election. Now, how do they know that? I don't know. First of all, my mother's not around, so good luck finding that out. Actually, gosh, maybe they do know who my mother voted for in the last election because they got somebody to use her name and commit voter fraud, right?
Which is what they do.
Okay, so the article goes on to say that the depth and breadth of the Obama campaign's 2012 digital operation, from data mining to online organizing, reaches so far beyond anything politics has ever seen. Experts maintain that it could impact the outcome of a close presidential election. So all you people who think that Romney for sure is going to win, you better get scared because
Obama
has this awesome digital operation and it's going to
and he will make people vote for him because he has the information. Because he has the information.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No,
somehow
yeah.
I'm going to vote for him now.
That's right, that's right. Says it makes the president's much heralded 2008 social media juggernaut, which raised $500 million and revolutionized politics, look like cavemen with stone tablets. Ooh. So in terms of having a close race, they keep saying that this race is so close, right? And this is Andrew Resage. I can't pronounce the last name very well, a technological strategist and publisher of Tech President. He says, quote, it's all about the data this year, and Obama has that. When a race is as close as this one, when a race is as close
goes,
as this
please,
one,
he puts please, end quote. In.
This one promises to be, any small advantage could absolutely make the difference, end quote. And he continues, he says, more and more accurate data means more insight, more money, more message distribution, and more votes. Yeah, people want me to talk about this from the perspective of privacy, and I will pretty quickly here. So how is it that they are doing this, that they're getting all this data on everybody and that they're going to win? Launched 2 weeks ago, Obama's newest innovation is the much-anticipated dashboard, a sophisticated and highly interactive platform that gives supporters a blueprint for organizing and communicating with each other and the campaign. Then it says, in addition, by harnessing the growing power of Facebook, our friend Facebook, and other online sources, the campaign is building what some see as an unprecedented database to develop highly specific profiles of potential voters. So when I looked at this at first, I'm thinking, okay, they're collecting data about us, right? How in the world is that going to affect anything? Because they're observing. And I started to think of that Schrodinger cat experiment. It's actually just a thought experiment, but it's supposed to illustrate something in quantum physics where the observation
of
something.
This is how they see us. This is how they see human beings.
The mere observation of something is supposed to determine. But it turns out not to just be that they think that they're going to determine who we're going to vote for by observing and collecting all this data. What they're going to do is they're going to try to tailor their messages directly to these potential voters. And it says, depending on factors such as, here are the factors, socioeconomic level, age, and interests. Socioeconomic level, age, and interests. Notice they don't talk here about ideas at all.
No.
They figure they can get
Obama's
you.
Record.
They can get you to vote for Obama, and all they have to do is appeal to your socioeconomic level, your age, and your interests, right. not ideas. They think ideas really don't matter. That
no.
somebody
and that, that we don't have ideas.
Yeah.
Also,
if you have fundamental philosophical ideas that say, "Look, I'm going to vote for an egalitarian nihilist for another 4 years to destroy this country when hell freezes over," right? They don't think that
yeah,
that
if
exists.
They have, if they have your data, you have to. I mean, that's what this article is saying. I mean, that's it. It's a, right?
By the way, Obama campaign, I put it all out there. You don't need to do any tricky things in
order
to collect this data from me. But at the same time, it doesn't matter how much data or what your message is.
Look,
I am not voting for you.
You know what this says? This says, holy, you know what? I'm losing here. So let me throw something out there.
I think it really does, and I think that there's a little bit here in the article that that'll indicate that. But I'll talk about here in a second. But they think that ideas don't matter, and in a way, you think maybe ideas with respect to at least some voters don't matter. Why?
Right.
Because through the public education school system that the left has had control of for decades. How many
they make sure that ideas don't matter.
How many students hold principled ideas or even know what their philosophy is? So maybe they can have some influence here. So what do they do with this? They tailor the message to your particular socioeconomic level, age, and interest because they think ideas don't matter.
Right.
Then they also can figure out a range of dollar solicitations that you might be more receptive to. So maybe you'll be entirely turned off if the Obama campaign asked you for $50. But if they ask you for $10, they know your socioeconomic level. They think, oh, this person can afford it, might do it,
right.
and they'll succeed. The other thing, and you've seen this recently, they found $3, this article says, to be a magic number. Asking supporters for that paltry donation to win a chance to attend a fundraiser with the president and George Clooney or Sarah Jessica Parker has generated tens of thousands of responses. And then guess what they do when you respond and you enter with your $3? It says they collect highly valuable data from those people and go back to them. So they entice you in. You pay $3 because you think you're going to hang out with Sarah Jessica Parker. You're not ideological. Maybe you would vote for Obama. Maybe you wouldn't. Suddenly, you are part of their database. The other way that they get you and they get your information about you is that they ask you to log on to Obama's campaign website using your Facebook login. It says Obama invites supporters.
Let me do that right now. Hold on.
Yeah, let's go do it right now. Obama invites supporters to log on to the campaign through their Facebook accounts, which gives the campaign one more avenue for data. And many of you know that Facebook is, through their applications, all these various applications,
right.
asking you to share data with these outside companies,
right.
these third parties. And it looks it looks like the Obama campaign has its own app that when you sign on to the Obama campaign website through Facebook is going to mine your Facebook account for bits of information that is going to help Obama tailor the exact message that's going to convince you that you must vote for him for another 4 years so he can destroy the United States.
Yes.
Woohoo.
Now, he puts it that way, right? So I can help me destroy the country, right?
He's like, I haven't finished yet.
Come on. Four more years.
The unsettling way that they put it here in the Politico article is that the Obama campaign has, quote, developed a more complex symbiosis between the campaign and Facebook, which is 10 times bigger than it was 4 years ago. So Facebook is 10 times bigger than it was 4 years ago and has far more personal information available to mine.
And this idea, though, that they can get votes from this. I mean, people are going to vote for them because they're going to vote for them. They're idiots. They're leftists. They don't know anything.
Yeah.
They just turned voting age, a lot of them. You know.
Now, in terms of the Romney campaign, it says, in general, the Romney campaign is going to stick closely to the traditional campaign model of heavy and expensive television spending, which probably isn't wise for them to do. But then it says they do have a digital campaign. And, of course, Politico is going to minimize
the
digital
right.
campaign. But
and what's the title of the thing? Obama Advantage.
Obama's,
you know,
State Advantage, yeah.
That's what they want to get out there.
So there's someone named Zach Moffitt, who is the head of digital operations for Romney. And he says the Romney campaign is outsourcing much of their data management instead of handling it in-house as the Obama campaign is. And this creates, quote, customized solutions to fit their needs. And then I really like the way he puts this. And this helps you maybe like more about Romney, which, again, I don't love Romney, but compared to Obama, I'm right there. But listen to Moffitt. He says, quote, as a campaign, we would not presume to know more than the collective intelligence and resources of the marketplace, end quote. And he adds that they're going to target the audience through, quote, our partnership with an industry-leading data management platform, end quote. So they say, look, we're going to the experts. We're doing this in this straightforward way. Whereas Obama has his little operation, you know, with all these techies.
Now, his digital community organizing efforts.
It says that Obama has staffed a full-time digital director in each of about a dozen battleground states to effectively run mini general election campaigns in those states. And someone named Messina, who is involved in the digital campaign for Obama, I guess, he says, last time we had two campaigns. We had the on-the-ground, door-knocking, person-to-person campaign, and then we had the digital campaign. But most of the digital campaign was really organized by supporters, by themselves. Now listen to this part. He says, this time, says Messina, it's the campaign that's driving and controlling most digital content. The goal is to burst through the wall of those two things. Now the translation, my translation,
right,
is
they're not getting as
that
many
they do
they?
Not have enough energy absolutely among
right
their supporters
so have to
have their digital campaign be
right
driven by those supporters.
Right.
And so they're having to do it
that's
using
why they have
Obama's
this thing. Absolutely right.
You know, and George Clooney's vast fundraising capabilities
right
to go ahead and pay these experts. So
and who
you know,
would want to meet Sarah Jessica Parker? I'm sorry, but who would want to meet her? But anyway, go on.
Oh, I know. They were calling her really mean names
yeah,
on Red
sorry,
Eye when they were talking about this story.
She's
oh my,
Bette Midler,
like horse
whatever
face something, or
yeah,
I don't know. They were really, really mean to her, and I don't like to be mean to her, but
yeah, but she's besides
if
her looks,
if she is campaigning for Obama, she is my enemy
she's
right
up to
now.
No good.
So
they're all up to no good.
You know, Politico's trying to intimidate us by saying that Obama has this huge data advantage. Oh, my gosh, it's a close election. It's going to make a difference.
Good call about that. That's
absolutely true. Right? But here there's little
it's
bit.
It's an admission. Almost.
I like the fact that Romney is going to real experts for his, you know, that he's saying we aren't going to outthink the marketplace, that they know what's going on.
And then
I also like this idea that they are having to be the prime movers
right
in their digital campaign,
right,
that there's not enough, I don't think there's enough quality
no,
and energy support out there for Obama that they can just let it take off on its own accord.
Yeah, the reality of the situation has made him less popular, even
yeah
with idiots.
Did
he
you hear,
idiots
by the way, remember that girl, her name was Obama Girl, they called, I
yeah
don't know what her name was, but they
yeah
called her Obama Girl.
Right.
I saw a little piece that said that while she endorsed him in 2008,
right,
she's not endorsing
yeah, yeah
him in 2012.
This happened a little while ago, actually.
Yeah.
She actually fell off. You know, she basically lost interest in him.
Yeah, so little,
because of what
little
he's doing
things like this. His Twitter numbers are impressive, but I don't
well,
take
he's
much
a,
stock
he's a
in
celebrity
that. Yeah.
I mean, you know, celebrities have big Twitter followers. I mean, that's numbers.
Obama has 16 million Twitter followers compared
well
to Romney's 500,000.
He happens to be one of the most popular persons, you know, individuals in the world. It is what it is, as what all presidents are. And he, you know,
yeah,
he still will rely on idiots to get him through. And I don't think he could find enough this time.
Michelle Obama has nearly 1 million Twitter followers, whereas Ann Romney has only 45,000. Now,
I wish McDonald's follows her and all the other fast food.
You know,
things.
Again, first of all, Obama probably tweets a lot more than Romney does. I mean, I don't know, but I haven't really checked out these guys' account. But this goes back to the idea of, you know, should presidents be spending their time doing various of these things anyway, or
yeah
is it just pandering if they are? And that's something that I think is interesting to ask. I don't necessarily think it means
Romney keep his message very simple. Again, I'm not Obama.
Yeah.
Just keep that alive, because he has really nothing. I mean, he's, as long as he doesn't ruin it, his message too bad, he'll probably win. I mean, he just can't get in his way. You know, Obama keeps killing himself every day. You know, last week when he said the one thing that you're going to talk about, you know, where
right
the private sector is doing
yeah
fine.
Yeah, oh, the private sector.
And almost
right
with no
right
concern, like,
right
come on, please.
At the very end, paragraph of this political article. It says, less certain for Obama is whether his vast digital empire can recreate the movement and excitement of 2008.
And that's the question that's over there with this Politico.
Obama girl's gone. I just saw a piece that says that he's 10% down among Jewish voters, although I learned that even though he's 10% down, he's still supported by 64%. Jewish voters, why in the world, I don't know, are you anti-Israel because he's anti-Israel?
They're anti-themselves if they vote for him. And that's what they are.
Well, I think anybody who votes for him is anti-themselves,
absolutely,
whether they know it or not.
No
but
doubt
that's,
about
that's
it.
That's a whole other story. And then, of course,
pro-Obama, anti-self.
There's his wonderful gaffes, right? But Obama, yeah, you don't have to gather data about me. You know, I've got all of my positions out there on Facebook, but the danger for you guys is that I am one of many and an increasing number of people in the United States who have ideas. And I disagree fundamentally, Obama, with your egalitarian message. And I also disagree with your nihilist program. And I won't vote for you. I don't care what message you tailor to me or how.
And that's the whole thing. It's like, I mean, they're going to create voters from this?
So cut all your apps off your Facebook, everybody. Who knows? Obama might be using all these apps. Symbiotic.
Look,
symbiotic. That word is a scary word in there. And, yeah, Deborah in the chat room says, let's talk more about, the privacy issue. I'm going to just do a plug. If you want to hear a lot about my views on privacy, about the value of privacy, the legal protection of privacy, you can come to the Objectivist Conference in San Diego that is starting at the very end of this month, beginning of next month. My first lecture is actually on July 1st, so hear about it there. The lectures, though, will be recorded for future sale as well, so if you can't come all the way out there, I don't blame you, but it is going to be fun and beautiful and awesome and a lot of really good lectures I'm looking forward to at that. So it's objectivistconferences.com. Obama said, don't worry, everybody. The private sector is doing fine. This is posted on June 8th. I've got the quote on Real Clear Politics. Moreover, I took one for the team again, and I watched two clips of Obama, two very short clips, mind you, but I watched the clips that were posted on Real Clear Politics, the original clip in which he explained how the private sector is doing fine, and then the clip from later that same day when he says, it's absolutely clear that the economy is not doing fine.
That's right.
It didn't go over well. Suffered through both of these clips for all of us here. They asked him about him blaming Europeans for the failures of his own policies, and he says, quote, the truth of the matter is that, as I said, we created 4.3 million jobs over the last 27 months, over 800,000 just this year alone. The private sector is doing fine. Where we're seeing weakness is in our economy is having to do with state and local government. So because state and local government is responsible for the economy. Oftentimes cuts initiated by, governors or mayors, governors, i.e. Scott Walker, right? Or mayors who are not getting the kind of help that they have in the past from the federal government and who don't have the same kind of flexibility as the federal government in dealing with fewer revenues coming in. Right. So this is the whole thing is we don't have enough government involvement at the state and local level. We need more government. Right. And when they're talking about flexibility, that word flexibility, what does he mean? He means that the federal government can just print and borrow all sorts of money. But the state and federal governments, they can't print and borrow money. So they don't have the flexibility just to keep spending as if there's no tomorrow, as if we're not going to be the next Greece or Spain or whatever is going on. Obama continues here. He says, and so, if Republicans want to be helpful, if they really want to move forward and put people back to work, what they should be thinking about is how do we help state and local governments and how do we help the construction industry? He says, because the recipes that they're promoting are basically the kinds of policies that would add weakness to the economy. Now, it's funny.
So he is blaming government.
Well, this is the thing. He stopped himself here. He said, add weakness to the economy. And I think he stuttered because he knew that if he used the term add weakness, it's like, oh, so the economy is weak. And you're just talking about adding weakness to it.
But
what is he? He's calling for more spending and borrowing and printing money to give it to state and local governments. He wants more people to be employed by government at any level.
Absolutely.
Because he thinks they'll keep voting for him.
Right.
So this is all about keeping him in power.
It's pathetic, and this is off the cuff, which is he's at his worst.
Yeah, and he's totally out of touch. Ken Gardner is around on Twitter, on Facebook, and he's always got a whole bunch of awesome stats. So thanks to Ken Gardner for the stats I'm about to give you. He says, is it just fine? He says, we have had a record 40 straight months of unemployment above 8%. The civilian labor participation rate is at a 30-year low. Median incomes have dropped $4,300 since Obama became president. And he says, and despite public sector workers doing much better, so imagine private sector are doing worse, you know, because of the average there. He says, real incomes have grown at the slowest rate since Jimmy Carter. Our individual share of the national debt has grown over $18,000 and is rapidly climbing. Gas prices have doubled, et cetera. And he says, I could go on and on. And so Obama later that same day, this is also posted on, Real Clear Politics, June 8th. Obama backtracks. It's absolutely clear economy is not doing fine. And he says, that's the reason I had a press conference. That's why I spent yesterday, the day before, yesterday, well, this past week, this past month, and this past year talking about how we can make the economy stronger. He says, the economy is not doing fine. There are too many people out of work. The housing market is still weak. Too many homes underwater. And that's precisely why I asked Congress to start taking some steps that can make a difference. So, you know, when I think of steps of the housing market, I think of, but go look at Peter Schiff, what he did this week. He testified in Congress. They actually allowed him to say some things in front of Congress about the FHA, which now wants to extend loan guarantees, not just to single-family homes, but to multifamily units.
This is a fiasco
and a farce, and it promises just to create another bubble like the one that got us in this mess in the first place.
And he called them out. And why did they invite him again?
They invited him back a second time, but they kept cutting him off. I think that they want to get his sanction.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
Well, we listened.
They do respect him.
We listened. We listened to all sides.
Right. He's more respected than they are. You know? So they're like, let's have him and let's flip him.
Well, and they kept trying to get him to say, well, if you were going to do it,
right.
I know philosophically you're opposed to it, but if you were going to do it, would you do it this way? Because, you know, ridiculous. Horrible. Go watch it. Peter Schiff is awesome.
You can tell the nature of these individuals
This is the kind of steps that Obama wants to take. He wants to put us on the hook for more. And in the meantime, I think Spain is being bailed out this week to the tune of billions of dollars. So it's just horribly ridiculous. To me, this is straight out of Atlas Shrugged. If he says the private sector is doing fine, what does it mean for it to be doing fine? It's doing better than state and local governments, right? State and local governments are broke.
Right.
The private sector isn't broke yet. And for those of you who know Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, you can see this from the term of the looter's perspective.
Right.
The private sector still has money to loot. Not everybody's going bankrupt. Not everybody's laying off workers.
And this whole thing.
So it's doing
fine. It's fine, meaning you'll do something. You know, private sector will do something.
Sure.
I mean, you'll do something like
the characters in Atlas Shrugged. They're being told, you know, you'll do something. You know, from Obama's perspective, we haven't killed it yet. You know, give me four more years to drain the life out of the private sector and put everything in the public sector.
It's not all people are not dead yet. I mean, they're still living, right? They want to live. They want to produce so we can steal from them.
And then we had breakfast with friends this morning, and one of them helpfully pointed out too. That this discussion about its state and local governments was a little nod to the people in Wisconsin who want to kill Scott Walker.
Right.
Obama saying, you know, we know that Scott Walker has messed you guys over, and we're going to help you. We, the federal government, we're going to figure out ways to maybe get around Scott Walker and make sure that you're getting the so-called help that you need. So Obama, you know.
Look, he blew it.
He blew it, but at the same time, I think he revealed what his true agenda is, which is they're still not broke.
What we're saying is he's not smart. If he was, he would have withheld a lot of this crap until a second term.
Yeah.
But he couldn't help it.
And this is why I think he stuttered in the first one. So we had other things that we would have liked to have talked about. Malcolm Gladwell is an idiot.
Yes. And check out my cartoon of him. Well, just, you know.
Yeah. Check it out at fostenmuth.blogspot.com.
I call him the guy with the bad hair.
Yeah. Then Obama totally insulted Queen Elizabeth at the Diamond Jubilee by at the same time saying that they're going to support the Falkland Islands bid for sovereignty. We talked about the intellectual bankruptcy of the left, so I think we got through most of the things that we wanted to get through. I thank everybody for joining us this week. If you like this show, please do spread the word and tell your friends. It's a word-of-mouth type of thing. Very little advertising budget. It's basically our two mouths, and we're not that big.
The Infidel, number two.
Oh, yeah. Check out The Infidel, number two, soon. We're still waiting
hopefully
for the ebook publishers,
can
come back with
that. Accept it and go on, because they have their, who knows.
During the week. Check out the Don't Let It Go Unheard page on Facebook and join in on some of the discussion of topics there. And here at Blog Talk Radio, there are little buttons, if you're listening to me now, that you can click, and you can either follow the show, you'll get some email updates about when there's going to be shows, or you can click on iTunes and some of the other feeds there, and you can subscribe, so you'll always get it on your MP3 player. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks,
guys. Have a good night. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.